Om Shanti. Good morning. This year, especially, actually this season, Baba has been emphasizing very much, and the last Mulya also, about having better control of our thoughts and time. So when Sister Mira got in touch with me yesterday and asked me what's a good topic, I thought, well, this is probably the topic for all of us. In the CC retreat, there was a panel on equality and becoming Bapsaman, and I said that I really didn't believe that we could become equal to Baba. We can become like Baba, but not equal. I suspect that the translation is a little bit out when we talk about equality. In any case, it's a very huge aim that we have. I mean, if you think about it objectively, if someone had told you before Gyan that you could become perfect in this life, or that you could solve all of your karmic situations and become completely free from any bondages, or even that you could become a deity, you probably would have laughed, right? When I came into Gyan and I declared to my parents that I was now making efforts to become a deity, they did laugh. My Lokic father looked at me, you know, what? When we first come to Baba, we do a lot of disservice, don't we, by saying things that people couldn't imagine or understand at all. But even then, and even now, if you think about your own perfection, and after all, we can only become ourselves in our own perfect stage. I can never become equal to Baba, but I can be the best me that I can be. And this is what we're here doing, isn't it? I'm trying to become the best that I possibly can. And it is a story of time and thought, actually, and it's a big story. It's a long story. In the world of physics, they say that time and space are inseparable, because everything that happens has a place and also has a space to happen in. But we would also add that it's impossible to separate thought also from time and space, because thoughts have a time and a place to happen. Everything is strung onto the wheel of the drama, or the reel of the drama as a part of the film. So the thoughts that come up in a particular time and place are the thoughts that have to come up. So it's very difficult to think about controlling your thoughts and controlling your time, because they're inseparable. If you don't control your time, it's because you're not controlling your thoughts. If you're not controlling your thoughts, you can't control your time. There's no use making, like typical time management tools where you know, there are different things you could do. You can prioritize, you can, you know, organize your life, you can have a list on the refrigerator that you mark off. You can have an electric agenda. You can put all of the things down. And maybe you can become very proud that you're able to tick off the items. Who has a list of things that they do every day and they write it down, either on a piece of paper or electronically? Yeah? Who doesn't organize their time at all? Well, What about the ones that didn't lift up their hands? Do you make any efforts to organize your time? Do you? Yeah, who's, say, 80% successful in organizing their time? Who's 60% successful? 40%? 20%? Okay. Who can't organize their time at all? Anyone? The thing is that it's really not about organizing tasks. It's about organizing our lives, because time is our life. We have the same 168 hours a week that Brahma Baba did, the same 1440 minutes per day that Brahma Baba did. What's important to do at this time? When we come to Baba, we get to know that there is actually a subtle time which connects thoughts and the use of our bodies and our wealth and our things, which is called the confluence age. But first of all, if I have to control something, I have to understand it. And then I have to have power, because understanding is not enough. So I have to understand how thoughts come, and I have to understand how time works. I have to have a sense of eternity, an experience, to give me at least the encouragement to deal with my life. Time is... our life is our thought and our time, isn't it? The reality that forms around us, we've thought it. Everything that I interact with, in fact, is something that I've thought in the past. And there it is in front of me. And so we know that our thoughts arise because of the sanskars. Remember the first lesson? You know, the sanskars are there, and the mind is like a sort of a beach, and the thoughts come. You can play with yourself in a passive way. That means you can wait and see what happens. Or you can constantly, consciously create a different consciousness. You can consciously create a different awareness about who you are and who, and what's going on. So it's obvious that we have to start there, you know. If I had to choose, do I organize my time or do I organize my thinking? And I had to make a choice between the two, which one would I start with? Thinking. Because it's our thinking that gives our sense of time. Who has a complaint, for example, there's not enough time? Yeah. I need 36 hours in a day to get through what I have to do. And you know what Baba would say? But Baba would say, but why do you give yourself so many things to do? You know? I mean, who invented your way of working? You did. Who invented the things that you do, even? You did. And it's not... So we interact with our reality that our own thinking has created. Yeah? And that interaction can give us a sense of mastery or a sense of slavery. But everything around me, I don't create the people or the things, but definitely I create the quality of the interaction with them. So the things that build up around me as an individual, the relationships, the quality of the relationships, the things themselves, even the relationship with money, the relationship with serving others, all of it is our own construction. You know, we're sort of inhabiting our world in a sense with things, or not just peopling our world, but also making the structures of our world and the way that we interact with those structures gives us a sense of mastery or a sense of slavery and everything in between. 100% master, 100% slave, you know. But it's all a question of how I interact with my reality, isn't it? things happen and I react. That's one way of living. Things happen and I respond to those things on the basis of my past experience. That's pretty normal, isn't it? There's a new fact, a new situation, you know, something that wasn't planned. Baba says we're living in the land of suddenly, so anything can happen to anyone at any time. And I can just react and respond to the things that happen to me. Or I can make things happen in a different way. That's more difficult, isn't it? I can make things happen in a way that does not give me a sense that I'm wasting my time or I'm losing time or I'm, you know, running after the things, the consequences of a badly thought past. But that option is mine, isn't it? So in order to be able to respond in such a way that things don't rob me of time, I have to maybe think differently. For example, the other day I was remembering that phrase from the Bible, which says, for what does it profit a man if he dedicates his whole... I can't remember the exact phrase... But if he dedicates his life running after wealth and he loses his soul in the process, you know, so what does it profit us to be accumulating things that will end up robbing us of time? Relationships is probably the same thing. If I develop not so good relationships, I will definitely have to spend time sorting them out. So it's to my own benefit that the way I interact with others is nice. You know, it's pleasing, it's easy, no strings attached, no expectations invested in the interaction. And therefore, I interact and there's no karmic result that will rob me of time. Again, if I interact with people in a not so pleasant way, in a sort of a nasty way, or even a, you know, maybe not even nasty, but with some sort of an expectation, definitely I'll be determining that I will have to spend time sorting it out later on. And the things that come up even now are the results of such interactions in the past. But if I understand the process, then I can control it more. Yeah. So, I don't know if you find yourself complaining about a lack of time. Actually, it's probably been a lack of foresight in the way that you've interacted with things in the past. And so now, you know, because you've developed something or you've accumulated something or created something, now you have to look after it. And Baba describes it like this. We're all walking down a big wide avenue, and on the avenue there are some side streets, and so we're going along, and you know the aim is great, and I'm going to get there, you know. Lakshmi Narayan is there in front of me and I'm making my efforts, but suddenly on the side something comes up, which in fact I have invested in the past. The investment is now accruing, it's just appearing, the result of that investment, and I become stopped by it, and I look at it, and then I play with it, and I stay with it. So I lose time going into this side street, which takes me off the main avenue of my efforts. I spend time there, so I lose three times: time going in, time staying there, and time to come out again. And when I come out again, I'm in exactly the same spot I was 6 months ago or 3 months ago, you know, in terms of my own progress. Does that happen sometimes? Yeah? So I need to understand this process. How is our experience of time in the Golden Age? We don't have watches. Even the ancient Greeks, they had two gods for time. One was called Kronos, and from that we have the watch, you know, chronometer. Kronos is the quantitative time, and you know, which is very, very present in the world today. You know, everything is absolutely adjusted to time, and you can, you know, even our watches can be controlled by some atomic clock somewhere on the internet, so that you can get a radio signal and you have exactly the right time. Is it the right time? When somebody asks you, what time is it? Is that the time? Maybe it's another time that we should be thinking about. But they had another god called Kairos, and Kairos was the quality time. For example, you can have a very deep experience in a few minutes, and really deep enjoyment, a very nice conversation with someone, a very meaningful conversation with someone that really felt worthwhile. And they would call that qualitative time. So, in which time do we live? Do we live in the Kronos world, or do we live in the Kairos world? I think in the Golden Age it's purely Kairos, isn't it? It's just, you know, just flowing from one scene to the other and interacting nicely and smoothly and lightly with absolutely everything and everyone. Can you see it as Baba? On the Muli of the third Baba took us to the experience, took us through the experience of the cycle, didn't he? You know, he inviting us to dance with our future form and to be that, to put it on, and to live in that sort of reality where there's no sense of, you know, the hours passing at all, because there are no clocks, obviously, in the Golden Age. No clocks. We invented clocks to try to organize ourselves, didn't we? But do you think clocks really succeeded in organizing human beings? Probably just made their time worse, yeah? Everything is connected to a clock, isn't it? Even here in Madhuban, unfortunately. I remember in Australia sometimes they had some retreats where everyone had to put their, you know, they could, it was a silence retreat and no one could have a watch. Someone was describing, if that's true or not, I don't know. They tried, yeah? So everyone had their clock in or their watch in, and so they had to sort of feel when it was Amrit Vela, was it? Or feel when it was the time for the Morley. I don't know. Maybe people getting up at 2 o'clock instead of 4. But, am I living the quality time that is the Confluence Age? I don't know if there are any clocks in the Confluence Age either. Clocks are something from Kali Yuga, aren't they? And so time and thought are inextricably linked. They can't be separated. What I think produces some event, and that event takes time. And the event comes back to me and I think about it, I interact with it again and produce another event. So all of the events that come up are in fact my interaction with previous events. Even an opportunity that comes up is an event that's previously produced, but I can change the quality of the experience that I have with it. And that's where I have to start moving to a sense of quality time. I have to change the order in which I'm not just passively reacting to what's going on, but I'm actually creating situations and scenes that will make me free. And free, and more free. In Argentina once, it was very interesting. We had a really, we're open to things. Let's try to have a seminar outside of the city in the countryside. In a big ground near our retreat center, they had set up a big tent. And let's see how many make the effort to come 50 kilometers from the capital to this nice place in the country to a seminar. And to our delight, 300 people appeared. On a Saturday afternoon. It was a lovely day, and everything was working except the projector. There was a seminar that was tied to a course that we were giving, and so there was some slides on PowerPoint, everything set up, and we couldn't get the projector to work, right? So plan B was to interact nicely with the people, actually play with the people, you know. So one thought occurred to me to ask them what was their favorite complaint. And, you know, some people, the first complaint that people have is, I don't have any time. It's always like that, isn't it? I don't have any time. No time. No time. No time. Even here you go to a Brahmin, no time, too many meetings, you know. But that was one complaint. Another one was, no one cooperates with me, which is also somehow time related. Because if no one cooperates with me, then I have to do everything, therefore I have to spend twice or three times the amount of time to get the thing done, because I haven't been nice enough to get people to cooperate with me. Yeah? The problem, of course, is that people don't cooperate with me because I haven't been nice enough. Yeah, basically, I haven't inspired their cooperation. And so, five or six different complaints came up. Why is it always me that has to do everything? You know, why this? And you know, yeah, people complain. So I say, okay. The people with similar complaints, can you please go to a different part of the audience? Right? And I'll give you 5 minutes, and you have to make a song about your complaint. So we had six different singing groups. And so one group was on this side, they made a song, I don't have any time, you know. Another group, no one cooperates with me. So there were different groups, right? And so, okay, I'm the conductor. Okay, we're going to have a complaints choir here. So first group, sing your song. Then they sing their song. Second group, now you. Third group, now you. Now fourth group, and now fifth group. So each one sang their song, and then I said, okay, everyone sing their song together. And they were all different songs. Can you imagine the noise? Yeah. And I said to them, and everyone was laughing, and I said, yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it? If I had a camera here, I'd take a film of you. It's ridiculous what you're doing. We do it all the time, and we're ridiculous. So I don't want to spend my life being ridiculous. Right? Anyone want to do that? Does anyone want to spend their life being miserable and sad? Hand up. Anyone spend their life, running after the losses that have been incurred by past ignorance? No one does. Everything that happens in my life, I'm just dealing with, stuff that's happening because I wasn't conscious or wasn't aware enough in the past, Someone said to me recently, I said, how are you feeling? And they actually said that this, my life has just become a life of stuff. Stuff is a word that, stuff and nonsense, it's no meaning. It's just appearances. Now, I don't want to spend my life just dealing with stuff. So I have to understand the process by which my own sanskars come up according to a situation, and instead of being the sanskars that are on the elevated side, if they are not, they will definitely determine that I will lose time by creating further stuff. Now, if I start to change this process, and of course this is where it becomes more real. Baba wants me to have be more powerful in the way that I interact with my own life. Look at, for example, the people around you, wherever you are. Look at them. Who are they? Who are the 5 or 6 or 10 people with whom you interact on a regular basis? There are not more than that, right? Maybe there are another 10 that you interact with on a semi-regular basis, and then there are another 50 with whom you interact once a month or once every 6 months. But really, each of us has a circle, an intimate circle of relatively few people. And there I am, struggling in that little intimate circle, in a way that I feel that I'm losing time, I don't have enough time, I can't control my time, they're what we could call, it's not that I'm consciously wasting my time, I would say that I'm unconsciously wasting my time because I've set up this scheme in which someone robs from me half an hour a week and someone else robs from me another hour, or someone else robs from me, 10 hours, even work, Why do I have to feel that going to work is such a big deal? It's only here that I think that, work is maybe a necessary evil, or work is something, I'd rather not be doing. Does anyone have a job that they don't particularly like? Yeah? Anyone? Or you're working for a boss that is not really the sort of boss that you'd like to have? Yeah? And you only work just because you need the money? Yeah? Now, what can you do to change that? You know? This is the thing that these are the little things that I have to understand. What is the process by which I have created a life with 5 or 6 or 10 other people, mainly, and maybe another 20 or 30, not so mainly, in which I don't feel that I'm progressing? If you change those 5 or 10 people, is there any guarantee that you'll progress with another set of circumstances? Probably not. You know, what happens internally is our own sanskars operating, yeah? People don't jump into our heads and make us think thoughts. So my sanskars are active. It doesn't really matter the circus that forms around me. But if my sanskars are still those sanskars, I'll probably determine a similar set of circumstances. If I change my sanskars, only then will I change my set of circumstances. This is basic jnana, right? So, on one side, I have to understand these processes. I have to understand how I am as a soul, and I have to understand the process of time. But as I said before, understanding is not enough. I need to have power. And I can only get power if I have a true connection with Baba. And what's a true, real connection, not simulated yoga? And, you know, a few years ago, there was a retreat here with married brothers, and they'd asked me to meet them. And there was one brother, he said to me, you know, I've been meditating for 11 years, and until now I have not seen the red light of Paramdham. I said, really? I haven't either. So, I mean, it's a pretty basic question, but then I felt sorry because, you know, there's someone busting his brains out to have an experience that he's not able to. Not very many people are visual people. I'm more of a feeling person, right? So I don't see anything in meditation. Other people do. Other people imagine that they see things also, you know. In the past, we used to, after meditation, everyone share experiences, and, you know, people would come back with the most incredibly descriptive experiences, but I was conducting the meditation, I saw that they were sleeping, so they must have dreamed the experience, maybe, you know. I was there, and Baba appeared, and he gave me a rose, and then we went walking through the garden. Oh, come on. Very imaginative. But not real. Not real. And that day, in fact, I went to Daddy and I said to Daddy, there may be lots of brothers like this brother who's busting his brains to have an experience of the golden red light of Paramdham. Which isn't the objective at all. Meditation is much more about feeling than about thinking. You know, we can never get our thoughts right unless we feel right. Yeah? Thoughts, you can't just control your thoughts by thinking. You have to control your thoughts by feeling the right things. Then it's natural. You know, a lot of our thoughts are fragments because our life is a lot of fragments. Now, if I start to make sense of my life and I feel that I'm living one life and not many, you know, I'm not a Brahmin in the center and then suddenly I put on lucky clothes and now I go to work and I'm another person there and then I come back and I'm relaxing in the bus and I'm just a completely incognito citizen just going around the supermarket or somewhere. And then I come to the centre again, I'm suddenly the Brahmin again, and I put my badge on, you know. And I'm put up in front of an audience and I put on my giving a lecture hat, you know. No, I'm the same person. I'm not different. So if I'm not different, I don't have to adjust anything with anything. You know, I don't have to adjust my spiritual life with my professional life or my family life. I just have to adjust me. Because I'm the same soul, the same being. And they're the same virtues that I have to show with my family in the centre and at work. Otherwise, you know, Baba says there's an alligator or a crocodile waiting at the gate of the centre with the mouth open. And I leave the morning, go straight into the mouth of the alligator and spend the whole day in the stomach of the alligator. And of course, the expression means that as soon as I walk out the centre, I forget everything that Baba said. So there I was in the Morley 5 minutes before. Wow, what an incredible point. Ah, Baba, you know, that's exactly what I've been wanting to hear, you know. Really fantastic. Wow, you are the greatest teacher. And as soon as I walk out the centre, and if somebody asks me at 10 o'clock, what did Baba say in the Morley? wait a minute. Oh yeah, at least I can remember the slogan, you know. Anyway, you see, we get caught up in the consequences of ourself, don't we? Wherever you go to yourself. You don't go somewhere else. Yeah? Well, you go to you at your work. You don't go to anywhere else. You go to you at your family, you know. Wherever you go, you are you, you know. And it's a pretty permanent thing too. I have to be me forever. I may as well be a good me. Right? In fact, nothing exists. When people say, there is a good argument for that actually. Nothing really exists outside of our own minds. Some people say like that. It's pretty true, actually. Yes, I can never see anything except through my own filters. And even if they're elevated filters, my own, let's say, configuration, even my eternal configuration, determines that the world that I live in will be just always a big extension of what I am. And all of us together, we sort of, in a way, we produce each other in a sense. Not literally, but, you know. I remember coming back from somewhere and I was with a brother and we were going to the centre. We were a few hours away in the car and I said to him, so we're going to the centre. Whose centre is it? Is it your centre or my centre or is it Baba's centre? And of course, my experience of that particular place is on the basis of two or three visits a year. That's, in my head, that centre is the sum of all of the visits that I had, all of the experiences that I've had. And it's very different from someone who lives there every day, right? And how different are those two centres from the way Baba sees that particular place? So, do I make those adjustments, you know? If I am seeing my version of, let's say, there are two people. This is John and this is Mary. Right? And there, you know, John has his version of Mary in his head. Mary has her version of John in her head. And say, Baba is up here watching this. You know, where's the truth? of this interaction? And do I make the effort to see even the situations in which I am in from that perspective? Or do I insist on my version, which is very partial, you know? It's as if all of us are walking around like this, you know? Oh, hi, Mary, how are you? Ah, and she, oh, I'm not bad, you know? Now, if I'm looking this way, and she's looking this way, we don't even see each other, yet we talk. You know? How much time do I waste trying to reinterpret the consequences of my own thinking? Which is another waste, you know? I've already created a wasteland, let's say, of certain things, and now I'm trying to reinterpret a wasteland in a different way. It won't work. I will just waste more time. It's much more benefit to be try to sit beside Baba and see the thing. And this is where our yoga actually helps us to not waste time. Because, you know, Baba will give me a glimpse of the real reality and not my particular brand of it or my version of it. You know, you say something, I can't get along with so-and-so, for example. Is there anyone in your life who's particularly difficult? Yeah? Is it another Brahmin? Okay. Yeah, we're famous time wasters for each other, aren't we? And if I have this better sort of a connection with Baba, then I'll start to see things in a clearer light. And I won't really have to spend time with things that I don't need to. So in a way, controlling thoughts, controlling the way we think rather than controlling thoughts, ends up controlling time. In the same way that if I want to meditate, I have to consciously create thoughts that lead me to the experience of meditation. Is that right? Is that what we say in the Course? So it's using our thoughts in a conscious and directed manner that leads me to an experience in meditation. In the same way, I have to, Baba said this morning about having this experience of being Trikaladashi, and of course that is very much related to understanding time, but it's much more the experience of time rather than just intellectually understanding. Well, yes, the golden age was like this and we were deities, and then, you know, little by little we lost our purity, and then suddenly we become worshippers of what we used to be ourselves, and, you know, we struggle, and then we go through lots of different experiences, and by the end of the Iron Age we are completely, you know, tired and worn out. No energy left for anything, and Baba comes and we become Brahmins again, and then we start to do some meditation commentaries in which, you know, I'm going to this golden red light, and then there's another one, you can do a meditation commentary, I've heard, to become an angel. Come on, you don't become an angel through a meditation commentary, right? Am I committing a blasphemy here? Let's be real, you know. Let's be real. It's not an intellectual process which I just have associated a string of ideas, but I am that soul. I am that deity soul. And that's very easy You know, just see yourself in the near future in which all of your best qualities are at their highest level and none of your not so high qualities are existing anymore. Everything that you can be, you are. And that's there, isn't it? So I have to feel that. I am that person. I am that soul. You know? I am this eternal being. And, you know, I don't know exactly if I've ever left Paramdham. But certainly I'm at the point... You ever seen that those fiber optic lamps? You know, these pieces of fiber. At the end of the fiber, there's a point of light. Have you seen those lamps? And there's lots of strings of fibers. Have you seen them? So I was imagining that, you know, here I am in this particular... What's the date today? The 21st of February 2012. So at the point of this fiber, my consciousness is alert here in this particular place, and I'm looking around. Here I am in Madhaban, after all, you know. And there's this scene that's happening that's happened infinite times. And here I'm sitting talking about something I've talked about infinite times, and there you are sitting listening to something. I don't know if you've get bored that you've listened to me infinite times, but it's quite amazing if you stop and sit back and think about it. And all the, you know, Baba says he was intoxicated. He's giving them all in a fly moves past. He said, that's the same fly that flew past 5,000 years ago. You know, the same fly. And that's the same laugh, you see. So here we are again, ladies and gentlemen, in this wonderful three-dimensional play in which each of us have our own parts. And I am that soul that I can sit back, I can watch 84 births go before me, you know. Which one, they're very interesting, very variety of parts. Mr. Mohini, I think the other day, was saying about Didi, how she would expect, or Baba said to Didi that, you know, had a lot of expectations on her, because he said, well, in the past you've been an engineer, you've been a, you know, a carpenter, you've been a mechanic, you've been an artist, you've been everything. So why can't you do something now? You've been everything. So, you know, I am the soul that's given life to so many, you know, personages. And that's me. I have to experience that. I'm the soul and this is all happening. I think it's when Baba says, for example, that we have to, you know, put the past as a past. And for me, Trikal Das is really, okay, if I have to look into the past, and even the recent past, what I have to do is to convert everything that's happened that still may be, you know, punishing me or making me suffer or, you know, making me lose time. I have to change it into some sort of a lesson, you know. And once I look at the past and everything that I see is just a lesson that's helped me to progress, everything that I've ever done has helped me to be here and to be in this place. So fantastic. Thanks, past. You know. Congratulations. You've brought me to where I am, but that's it. That's the relevance of the past, you know. And the future, we look ahead and there I am, this beautiful deity form, not pretty soon actually, and I'm going to be there dancing with my own future. I will be my future. if I don't use the future in a way that inspires me, then I cannot conquer the fear that makes me lose time because of it. You know? The past will only make me lose time if it is in the form of what you could call inertia. You know, inertia is the weight of something that you have to conquer to make something move. Right? There's probably a more accurate description of inertia. But let's say to move, let's say the car breaks down, you have to push it to get it to start again. You've ever done that? Ever had to push a car to get it to start? Yeah. You know, because the battery's run down. But to get it moving, it really is hard. But once it starts to move, it's not so difficult at all. So inertia is the initial weight of something before it starts to move. Now, all of the past that I have not converted into some sort of an understanding, a lesson, or thank you very much, you've taught me a lot, it's still weight, you know, and I have to, that's what keeps me back. That's what keeps me held in these situations that rob me of power and time. And the other thing is that if I don't have a clear and inspiring image of my own future, then I won't ever conquer fear. And fear also makes me lose time, right? So past and future have to be really understood and experienced, okay? I have to experience that I have learned a lot. Drama has been beneficial. Everything that has happened has been absolutely perfect, and so perfect that it is repeated, right? So, you know, have you ever had a long situation and you went to one of the seniors and, you know, you cried out your heart and, you know, this happened and that happened, these people and that happened and, you know, and so on. And they look at you and say, well, drama is beneficial. Oh. If I can really live that experience, then I really have understood. My past is not a problem anymore. It's been absolutely beneficial. Then the future is, you know, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So what's left? I've just got the present. And in the present I have to prioritize, you know. This is my most important life. Am I arranging situations that are going to make me lose time? Or am I arranging things in such a way that I will actually have time to do what is really meaningful? This is the question, isn't it? Have I redefined all of the things that I do? You know, have I redefined all of the people around me, those 10 or 12 people who are not actually my enemies, or they're not difficult people, they're my best teachers, as Baba says, you know? So have I redefined things in such a way that I will interact with them in a more elevated stage, and therefore I will not lose time with anyone anymore? Yeah? Anyway, what is losing time? What is wasting time? It's when you feel that it has not been beneficial, or when you feel that you've actually caused something that you're going to regret later on. Yeah, that's the feeling of waste, or you've just let the time fritter away. You know, it's really not about organizing tasks, it's about organizing our thinking and our feelings related to the things. What's my relationship with matter also? That's a big one, you know. Am I still a seeker? Or am I someone who's found, you know? Obviously, as Baba said the other day, if there's some emptiness, you'll want to fill it in with something. But if there's that true connection with Baba, you will have definitely a few signals that you've got a good connection. You'll feel very light. You'll feel very inspired. Yeah? a few things down on paper this morning. There's a sense of detachment. Baba said about unlimited distaste, disinterest, but I saw and I really resonated with it that the word is not disinterest. You know, the viragya that Baba uses, the translation will be our passion has become dried up. So it's actually dispassionate, viragya. So unlimited dispassion. It means there's nothing that you feel passionate about more than Baba, basically. Baba's filling the soul so much. So, just because I'm sitting up here doesn't mean I have all of the answers or any answers. But if you've got any comments or questions, you can use this microphone here in the front. Anyone would like to ask something or say something? Yeah? Yeah, it can come up. Anyone else? Just as I was saying before the meditation come on, you know, it's really, we fill ourselves up with the things that our own lack of effort leaves space for. So if there's enough effort, there's no space for anything else. Yeah?
I would like to know what's the real point to make effort to change me and my life if the drama is predestined and is the same. For example, you said the same fly flew by. We had the same laughs. We had the same scenes. So what's the point?
Yeah. The point is that we don't know, you know.
We don't know?
The point is that we don't know where we ended up or how we ended up. Now, if I have the choice, and I do have the choice, in absolute sense I don't have any choice. That's true. But in a relative sense I have every choice. And one of the laws of the drama is that in this eternal predestined situation, one of the laws is effort and result. So if there's any effort, if there's no effort, there's no result. And let's say I have to make the choice always. So in every single, Baba says, sit at the confluence of every situation and see. You can go this way or this way. You know, the letter Y, you know, then goes like that. In most languages, there's a letter Y, goes up like that. Pythagoras was fascinated by this geometric figure because it actually meant was that at every single situation, you can go this way or that way. To be or not to be, to do or not to do, to say or not to say, to go or not to go, every single circumstance. Now I have to, the point of it is that I have to tune my intellect to make the right choice. I don't know what the choices are before I make them. I don't know the consequences. So the point of it is that I tune my intellect to see the perfection. That's the point of it. To do that, you need to make some sort of effort. This is my future result, right? In the cup, here is me. Now I'm sitting there, you know, if I'm going to be a deity, come on, it's in the drama. The cup is not going to jump off the table and come into my mouth. I still have to make the effort to do that and to take a drink. You see? Now, that moment of making the choice is when my intellect is elevated or not. Now I make the effort so that I can make my intellect elevated to be always, you know, going the next step. Take the drama step by step. Now, we use the consciousness of eternity to see the whole picture. But in the drama, relative to what's going on, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And so the point is to make the decision to the best, to do the best thing next. Yeah? Okay? Anyone else? What's the best thing that we can do next? Ah, there's one more.
I wondered if you could say a few words about how you developed feeling so that what you know is not just an intellectual exercise.
Okay, yeah. Did you understand that? How do you develop the intellect to know that how do you develop yourself to know that your feelings are not just an intellectual exercise? Well, what do we feel? We feel love, we feel happiness, we feel peace. We can't think love, think happiness, think peace just and just magically there. We have to feel it. So if I feel great, if I feel good, if I feel happy, if I feel, you know, free, these are feelings. You can't think free and be free. You have to feel free. So all of those experiences are feelings, actually, that have been, you know, developed internally. And I do agree with you that it's perfectly possible to simulate a meditation, just like a flight simulator. Somebody gets into the machine and they can put the name of the airport that they want to, you know, the pilot training, they go into a flight simulator and they, you know, this is the airport that I want to take off from and this is the airport I want to land at. And so they go through every single thing of taking off and landing the plane. But in fact, they haven't left the ground. So we have to look for indicators of our spiritual progress. Now, if I'm doing the right thing in my own development, I will feel lighter, I will feel freer, I will feel that people are more cooperative, I will feel more benevolence. One of the clearest signs of having had a real contact with Baba is benevolence. You know, there's a feeling of mercy and a feeling of wanting to really serve others. If I'm just in my own space thinking about my own thing and not particularly helping in anything, it's probably I'm in a huge intellectual trip inside my own head. I will feel more free. I will feel more available. I will be more available, actually, for everyone if I'm developing properly. You know, and that's not an intellectual exercise to be truly available to others. Okay, let's probably do the best next. Ah, okay, one more. Last one. Because I want to. Let's get into some heavy duty meditation here for 15 minutes.
Om Shanti. I just want to say something, how I create my feeling. I've been in Zen for some time. Now what I feel is, wherever I go, I feel that people love me.
Ah.
I feel that they accept me. I feel that like water when you pour, it can seep through anywhere. That's a feeling I have of my own self. And even the day before I left from Madhuban, I went for the 75th birthday of my brother-in-law. At the moment I went to a table, one of the Buddhas said, so nice to have you on our table. And this creates a feeling to me. And this morning, when I was here for the last 10 days, I was in complete silence. Literally, I was fluttering with joy and happiness.
Fluttering?
Yes. Because the reason is you don't talk to anybody. Your mind is you want to be with Baba. If anybody says, looks at you, you just smile. And so there were no waste thoughts, nothing whatsoever. Mm. And this morning I decided I will go to Baba's room. And I always do a little bit of writing. So this is what I wrote this morning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah?
Effort.
Yeah. 21st February.
Wait a minute before you start. How many pages?
No, just a short one.
Okay.
Yeah. I never write long ones because okay. It makes me dry.
Okay, good.
Baba's room, Pandava. Sweet Baba, I just want you and you alone. When I have you, I, the soul, have everything, tangible and intangible. So what more do I need? Baba, I'm just fluttering with peace, bliss and happiness. I'm just bubbling with joy. I have attained all that I need. I need no more. But I have to share what I have received with other souls, so I'm sharing it with you. Sometimes I wonder, why is it I'm so fortunate? What good karma have I done, either in my present life, in my past lives, or my present life? I really don't know. I feel so enriched, so wealthy, so full, that I feel I'm overflowing. Thank you, my beloved father.
Okay.
And when I drove back to Gyansarva, there was a brother from UK. I sat with him and read this to him. He enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it.
And we enjoyed it.
This is how I create my feelings.
We enjoyed it. You see, anyone else have an Amrit Vela like that? Very nice. So that's your answer. That's when you feel like that. Of course, you know, the other day we had this workshop on building service teams, and the obvious question that we always make, if you think that you're great, right? Are people happier when you arrive or when you leave? You have to look for other signs, you know, in the people around you. Because if they celebrate your arrival, wow, great, you're here. It means you're having a very nice impact on them. But if they celebrate your leaving, great, he's gone. You know, thank goodness. Wow, what a heavy vibe that guy has. You know, that's the way you can judge. Look at others. Just don't look at yourself. Look how others receive you, as he was saying. If their eyes light up when you arrive, it's a good signal. If they look the other way when you arrive, not a good signal. Okay. Oh, last question. Ah. Okay, you should have come up in the queue, but it's okay. It's nice, huh? It's a question or a...
Just translate for her.
Okay, go for it.
From Thailand.
What's your name?
It's Jack.
Jack?
Yeah.
Jack from Thailand. Okay, Jack.
This is a question from Sister Cookie.
Cookie. Jack and Cookie. Okay.
She asks, how do we know that when we are in meditation or yoga, that our yoga is the right yoga? And how do we know that our sin will be absolved?
Well, it's similar to the other question. You'll feel a fluttering of joy, as he said. But it's really like yoga and meditation is a relationship. And it's a reciprocal relationship. It's not you sitting and, you know, admiring Baba in the sky, but it's a feeling of connection. That, you know, this one, wow, you know, this one is the one who is my teacher, my father, my friend, my everything, you know. And so If it's still thinking, you know, Baba's a point of light and I'm a point of light, it's very intellectual. But if it is connected to the relationship that we have with that one, it's very enjoyable. So you will first of all enjoy the experience. You will like the experience. It won't be difficult. You won't have to think too much. Meditation is more about feeling the connection rather than, you know, like if you're eating a strawberry, you're not describing to yourself its chemical composition, are you? You know, this is this and, you know, it's sort of a little bit bitter, maybe a little bit sweet. No. You're not describing it to yourself. You're actually tasting it. So in the same way, meditation that's real is a tasting. It's a like... probably less words better, actually. Less words better. And then if it's like that, definitely, what does it mean to absolve sins? It means actually the things that are active become inactive. Because over the cycle we actually don't get rid of the sort of those sanskars forever, because the next cycle they will come up again. But what happens is that they become absolutely inactive. So my connection with Baba is activating the best in me and at the same time deactivating what is not so good in me. So I look at sins like that, you know. The word in Hindi, I remember Sister Sudesh was giving this definition. Vikarma actually means the action that separates. So a sin is actually some action that separates me or separates someone else from truth or from reality or from Baba. So since I'm doing the opposite of separating, that means I'm connecting. I'm connecting with Baba, and I'm connecting with my true self, and I'm connecting with a true understanding of the world around me. I'm doing the opposite of separating. So what actually happens is I stop separating. Conquering sin means to stop separating me or others from reality and the truth. So that stops. Okay?